This episode is sponsored by Tin Can Timepieces. Looking for a watch that's built for anything life throws at you? Let me introduce you to Tin Can Timepieces. This is more than just a watch. It's a commitment to quality and purpose. Tin Can Timepieces is proudly based out of Georgia and is owned and operated by an active-duty U.S. Navy submariner. That's right, a company built on discipline and precision. Every watch they create is handcrafted and features reliable automatic movements, ensuring you get a premium quality feel with every tick. Whether you need a rugged diver or a classic dress watch, Tin Can offers an assortment of styles for every mission. Tin Can Timepieces. Hand-built for purpose, built for the depths. Dive deeper and check out their collection today at tincantime.com. All right, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the pod staff. With me today, I have Miss Deb Gardner. Deb is a Guinness World Record swimmer, author, former sports broadcaster, Miss America winner and global keynote speaker who joins us today as the ultimate performance expert to help you get off the block and dominate your life. Welcome, Deb. Thank you. For our listeners.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Awesome. Well, I want to get started by talking about just your swimming, because I think that's like a super cool thing. Like, I've never had a guest on that's a world record holder of anything. So I wanted to just highlight that because that is insane. If I get this wrong, correct me, but a world record swim on the Catalina Island Channel for 21 mile swim. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes. And I didn't start out as a record breaking world record, that's for sure in my life, but certainly has been fun to finally land it, which is what we usually say in the swimming world. Open water swimming is you land it when you finally reach land. But yes, it was 21 miles. Most of it was at night. It's part of the Triple Crown that I am going after, which includes the Manhattan 20 bridges. And the English Channel, but they always say Catalina is the hardest because it's mostly at night. So at least I got the hard one out of the way.
Yeah, I saw that. I was reading up on it, and it said like the best time to start is at night because of the currents or something like that. And then I saw that it was like shark infested waters and stuff, and I was like, my goodness.
Yeah, jellyfish. I mean, all kinds of sea creatures. But it took me 13 hours and 5 minutes and 12 seconds to swim that because I ended up picking a date that included the full supermoon. And when you have a full supermoon, that means there's going to be currents and there's going to be swells. And there were 2 to 3 foot swells all night long. So I was fighting the water tremendously, and because my goal was to stay in the 12-hour mark, but it just wasn't possible for that particular night.
Now, I'm assuming you like stop. I saw there was like a boat following you. Like you stop and eat or rest for a minute or something like that too, right?
Yeah, there is strategy to the whole thing. I have a crew. I have a chief crew, and then the boat has their crew. It's a chase boat. So the swimmer is positioned between the chase boat and the kayak. That way you are protected because the kayaker is scanning for sharks and things like that, whereas the boat is also. But the boat, the swimmer follows the kayak follows the boat is kind of the order that it goes in. But the feeding happens off the kayak. And it happens every 30 minutes. Some swimmers can last 40, 45 minutes. I can't. I love to eat. And burning that many calories throughout the night, you just have to be very careful that your organs are functioning and that you are still coherent and that you're not getting hypothermia from the cold water, which that night was 66 degrees. I mean, literally, Michael, all summer long, the water was like glass lake water and 70 degrees. And then my night of the full supermoon flipped all that. It turned out to be a very cold swim. So did I get hypothermia when I got on the boat at the end? I did. And I didn't even know what it was going to be like. But thank God my crew captain knew and she took care of me really well.
Wow. What do you do whenever you get hypothermia?
They strip you down right on deck, and they put a, you know, as many blankets around you, make sure you get your wet cap and goggles off, and put some hot tea down you really quick, and they hug you. They hug you and get you all warm as quickly as possible, because if not, then you end up in the hospital.
Yeah. So it just after 30 minutes or so, you're good, or?
Yeah, it took about 30 minutes.
Yeah,
it did. That's a good question. The boat stayed there until that was taken care of before it headed back to port, because they got to make sure that, you know, everything's A-okay. So we sat there for about 30 minutes. Yes, you're right.
You. Now, what do you eat whenever you're stopping every 30 minutes?
Oh, that's a good question. A lot of people, a lot of swimmers have different things that they want to eat. And since this was my very real first challenge in open water that I just wanted to take on, I didn't have much practice in that area. So I was prepared to have some solid foods, but they had to go down smoothly. So I had baby food, mashed potatoes, peaches, you know, anything that can slide down really quick. But it turned out I really didn't need it. I only needed my feeds, which is endurance. It's an endurance mix that we drink, and we put it into hot chocolate so that my core can stay warm. And that was a perfect choice. I never experienced that before, but my crew captain said, put hot chocolate in there. And sure enough. And then you've got the goo, sponsored by Hammer Nutrition. So I got a lot of goo, which was flavorful. So, and then, you know, you have a little, these little, treat waffles. And so the kayaker surprises you each and every time. So it's kind of something to look forward to. Like, you know, you're a kid waiting to put your hand in a cookie jar. It's kind of that feeling. So I always look forward to the feed. And that's pretty much how I treated the whole strategy. I just swam from feed to feed to feed without trying to look forward to the lights on land. As close as it may look, it was still pretty far.
Yeah. Wow. So whenever you say the goo, I'm just curious on this, because I have a few friends that do like triathlons and stuff like that, and they have like these little gel electrolyte packets. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Yes. Okay. You've got the electric lights, you've got the goo, you've got other nutritional mixes, and you kind of just have to find out what works for you. It's kind of a trial and error process, but I learned a lot from it, know what I need to do next.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. I've seen a few people on like, you know, when the marathons are on TV and things like that, I've seen a few people that did not find the right foods for themselves. And that ends up being a pretty messy situation.
Yeah, you do. And it's funny because I wasn't expecting this, but the observers, I had two observers on boat. And each time I took a feed, they would ask you, are you peeing? Are you peeing? In Europe, they're all like, are you weaned? Are you weaned? Because they need to test you to make sure that, again, your bodily functions are working. And then they'll give you the finger test. You know, they'll give you the finger where, you know, okay, I'm going to give you three fingers. You know, you tell me how many more fingers it's going to take to get to five. And so if they put three up, I've got to put two up. I can't say it. I have to follow their instructions and put the fingers up, and that way they make sure you're okay too. And as far as the feeding is concerned, the boat never stops. It never stops. It slows down for your feeding. So I have to flip on my back and chug while I'm still kicking. So that way I'm still moving. So there's no stopping whatsoever, even during the feed.
Now, when you do something like this, it sounds like there's just like tons of people that you need to have in place. And like, you have to have the boat and the kayaker and all that. Like, is that does Guinness World Records pay for that, or is this like self-funded?
Yeah, no, it's all, I have sponsors and self-funded for sure. Yeah. And my sponsors are throughout the entire journey. I couldn't do without them. Dare to Retire is a financial wealth company that I really enjoy working with. Hammer, Red Equipment. And there's so many more that I love to partner with. And that really helps. So I had about a 12-person crew, and you pretty much have two of everybody. You have two kayakers, two observers, you know, you have two of everybody except the chef, the cook, there's only one. And the reason why is because they have to go down into the cabin and sleep through the night. So they're on a 2 to 4 hour shift because, you know, it takes, you know, 13 hours. So they can't survive that whole, you know, that whole time. But because they're constantly working, every time I took a breath, and I'm one of those fortunate swimmers that can breathe on both sides. That's just the way I learned back in the, you know, my swimming pool days. So I would watch, and the super moon, you know, was bright enough to where even my kayaker didn't have to have the headlamp on, so I could see her face. So it was really cool because I could see her preparing the feeds, and then I could see the people on the boat preparing for whatever else they need to do. So I don't even really know what they do. I'm supposed to only take care of my part, but the best thing is we're just an entire team. I couldn't do it without them. I was really, really lucky. I had a great crew.
Yeah. That's badass. Honestly, that is really cool.
It was interesting. And it was frightening, at the same time, especially because when you first get there, you're there about 10:30 or 11 at night. And the one thing I'm thinking is, you know, any normal human being would be on the couch, you know, watching Netflix right now. And here I am out in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, getting ready to dive in all by myself. Nobody else out there other than I saw a cruise ship. I saw some other boats. And I think there was another swimmer out there with one of the other boats. But it was interesting. So you can't go all the way into the island with the boat. So I have to swim, you know, like a football yards down to the beach, and you have to literally get out of the water after already diving in, and it's cold. So I got out, and then as soon as my feet or my toes hit the water, I have to hold my hand up. And then once it hits, I bring it down, and that's when the clock starts. So you start diving in. Of course, I'm faced right off the bat with a lot of kelp in the way, and trying to swim through that. I'm like, oh my gosh, I hope this is not all the way, but it did clear out finally. And then finally met up with the boat, and then the boat starts taking off with me.
Wow. That is incredible.
A lot of videos, a lot of pictures on you know, social media. We did a live feed, so that was really fun. My videographer, photographer, Trey Hernandez, did a fantastic job, and people were up all night watching this thing.
People that cared about you are just like wanting to make sure you're okay too.
Yeah, especially my parents. They didn't sleep at all night.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I wanted to get to next. I saw that you have a very tight-knit, close relationship to your dad, who I correct me if I'm wrong, but he's a veteran. Just tell me a little bit about your upbringing and how that relationship with him just like kind of got to where it is today. And I know you dedicated some of the swim to him and stuff like that, or if not all of it, but tell me about that.
Yeah, that's why I chose Southern Cross Service Dogs for Veterans. And they will be on all my swims as I continue the Triple Crown Challenge, actually a couple Triple Crowns, and the Ocean Seven as well. So I'm very, very proud of the veterans. I believe that they just do not receive as much credit as they deserve and would love to see more attention there. And one of the ways to do that was to provide some funding for the service dogs. And it was fun because the organization brought Frankie, one of their dogs, to the launch and to the finish, and all the way from Florida. This little dog flew for my swim, which was really cool. And even my upcoming swims, he'll be on the boat this time. So we're looking forward to that because it's a bigger boat. But yeah, my upbringing, I am a Marine brat and proud of it. And was brought up in one of the hottest cities in America, Yuma, Arizona, where it averages about 115 a day, right? And that's how I learned how to swim, because it was so hot. I just went down to the John F. Kennedy 50-meter Olympic size pool and learned how to swim across the short end, which was 25. I'll never forget my very first tryout for the team. I went clear across, went very fast because I, for some reason, thought a shark was following me, and cried after I got out and said, I'll never do this ever again. But the next morning, I woke my parents up and said, hey, I got to go to swim practice. I don't know what clicked or what changed, but I've been, swimming ever since. And in Yuma, we actually did live in a 16-foot aristocrat trailer. And it didn't have any bedrooms. I didn't have a bedroom because there was no bedrooms, and there was no closet for my school clothes because there was no closet. As a matter of fact, our refrigerator was on the outside of the trailer. And we always said we were glad the swimming pool was nearby because we didn't have a bathroom inside the trailer. So,
I saw on your website it said, yes, I peed in the pool.
Well, we all did, right? Yeah, there's no doubt about it. But that's how I learned how to swim, was in Yuma. And as a Marine brat, you know, you move around a lot. And then my dad got into basketball coaching. He's always been very supportive of my swims, even to this day. Both my parents are. And so everywhere we moved, I would always find a pool, which really relates to my travels today. I mean, I just have a cap, goggles, and swimsuit, and whatever pool I find, USMS, you know, United States Masters Swimming Organization, does partners with the YMCA. So it's really cool that, you know, wherever I travel, all I have to do is find a YMCA and get in. So it makes it easier for me. But especially at my age, I am 66 going on 67. I'm probably one of the only women in the world that admits her age. And yet I'm proud of it, because as my body starts aching more and more, I tell you what, there is nothing more than swimming to make it feel better.
That's awesome. Yeah, I think I think that really, to me, kind of makes one thing on your website stick out to me. It said 85% of people keep peeking into other lanes and eroding their confidence and focus. And I feel like for you, that lane in one category of that lane for you is the swimming, to where it's like you're not letting age or aches or just whatever, like, that is your lane, and that's what you did ever since you were a little girl and you said, hey, I need to go to swim practice again, after thinking you weren't going to do it. So that's very commendable.
Yeah, it wasn't always that way, Michael. I mean, literally after college, I quit swimming. I literally quit for about 10 to 12 years because I was struggling in college. I mean, I was a walk-on. Yeah. I actually quit swimming, missed the 1980 Olympics because of the boycott and so many, you know, other events, Pan Am Games, and it was just very, very frustrating. So I thought I would get into the corporate world. And there, once I got in the corporate world, I experienced being broke, rejected, depressed, fired, but all before I was 25. So I got hit hard with the reality of life after swimming. And so I actually call them belly flops. I've had many belly flops and in my life, just like the ones that when you try to commit to that perfect dive into a pool and you end up, you know, a belly flop, and it stings, but those stings teach you a lot. So I thought, you know what, those belly flops are going to follow me everywhere, so I might as well get back in the water. And so I did. I got back in the water, but discovered open water as my real passion. So it's kind of interesting when you sometimes let things go. A lot of people say, you know, never quit, never quit. But sometimes you have to. I believe it's okay to stop what's not working and choose something else. And you brought up, you know, my lane, and that's my whole brand, is Own Your Lane. And sometimes that lane you're in is not going to work for you. So you've got to change lanes, because I've always heard, stay in your lane, stay in your lane, stay in your lane. It's like, yeah, but we never did that in swimming. We would always change lanes. If somebody was, you know, slow and they're kicking us in our face while we're trying to pass them, no, we're gonna go to the next lane. Just like when people are on the freeway, you know, you're driving behind a slow person. Are you just gonna stay there? That's not working for you. You might as well change lanes and get into the faster lane, or exit, get off. So it's okay. And I think a lot of people struggle with that, Michael. People think I got to keep trying. But if it's not working, you got to get off. You got to change it. And so, but whatever lane you are in, you got to own it. You got to totally own it and utilize it to the best of your ability and everything. And that's where, if it doesn't work, yeah, change. But until then, you know, do what you can, do your best in that lane. And so when I came back and discovered open water swimming, I've totally have found my lane and I'm owning it now.
For sure. Awesome. So yeah, I guess the concept really is stay in your lane. And don't peek to other lanes while you're in your lane, but have a realistic goal maybe in mind to say, all right, if I put everything I have into it right now and it just doesn't pan out by this date or by this milestone or whatever, then maybe I should look to switching. 'Cause, and that's a hard balancing act to do. Like, yeah. I was actually just watching Shark Tank yesterday, and it was very sad but very like comforting almost that this lady came in and she had been in this lane for a product that wasn't going to work, and she'd been doing it for 10 years. She had put $1 million of her own money and that was all she had, and unfortunately no one wanted to invest, and they said, honey, you just gotta switch products, you're a great entrepreneur, you've just got to switch the lane.
Right. And that's a great example, Michael, because until you recognize that it's not working for you, yeah, you got to change lanes. But once you do, you got to own it. You got to do your best in there and do what you can, but recognize when it's not working. But also, you know, like you said, you know, doing what other people are doing is not going to service you. You've got to do what your knowledge, you know, your wisdom you bring to the table, your skills, the techniques that you have learned along the way in your life, and utilize it. But doing what other people are doing, no, you're just wandering into their lane, and that's not going to serve you.
I have just a question that personally I wanted to ask you. Okay. Is you said before that you had belly flops, tons of them. By the time you were 25, you experienced like all this stuff. I just turned 27 last month. Okay. So my question for you is, at 27, like, just to give my generation and people my age hope to where, like, if everything's not great or perfect right now, like, what's your advice to, you know, that 25, 27-year-old Gen Zer, let's just say?
Yeah.
And, you know, from going there to all these belly flops at 25 to now being pretty much very famous and speaking everywhere and doing all these swims and almost just kind of having like a fearless mindset. Like, did you have that at 27?
Well, that's a very good question, because I always think, well, gosh, if I can go back to when I was 27 and know what I know now, I mean, I would be on top of the world even more so. And that, I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's important. I mean, I wish I had somebody ask that question to, you know, and I heard the answer when I was 25 or 26 or 27, because it's like, but at the same time, I don't think we really listened to people that were older, like our parents and things like that. It's like, oh, mom, dad, what do you know? Well, now we're at that age and it's like, oh, now I get it, right? So I want to just say the best thing about belly flops is not to ignore them. Don't just like whisk them under the carpet and forget about it. Actually learn from them. The failures, anything that really challenged you and it didn't go the way you wanted it to, just stop for a minute and go, okay, why didn't this work? What went wrong? I want this to happen so bad. I want this job. I want this promotion. I want this, you know, to travel to this country, whatever it is that you want to do. Recognize your gift and just take on the belly flops. Don't ignore them at all. And so when people even come to you for advice, don't even ignore that. Listen. Listen to what they have to say, and then you make the ultimate decision. Instead of, you know, today I think we're just like blah, 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 talk, 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 talk. Instead, we need to open up our ears and just listen to what's going on out there and what people are saying, and really rely on those that you trust and that have been there. That was my biggest thing. The other one was my mind. I mean, really, how do we focus on what we know in an AI world today? I feel bad for the younger generation not knowing what it's like without the AI in our world. Literally, we were more creative. More riskful. We were more adventurous.
Resourceful.
I just see younger people today really tighten up and afraid to take that extra step. But that's what we did. And we loved it. And we challenged ourselves. We got out of our comfort zone more than anything. But I really hope that those that really want to make a difference, discover your gifts, don't ignore belly flops, and just go for it. Just go for it. And that's what I discovered when I got back into open water. I thought, okay, I'm going to take this on. I'm going to go into the shark world. I'm going to go into that sea creature world and see what that's like. And, you know, when it came to Catalina, there was never any incident for sharks or anything like that in the 100 years that there's been swimmers out there. But then a week before my launch, a European swimmer did get attacked by a baby shark on the hand and the foot, literally a week before my launch. So of course I was going to be scared. He's fine, but they had to pull him, which was not fun because it's an expensive sport. You don't get that refunded when something like this happens. And that's true with life too. You don't get a refund when something happens. You just have to know how to handle the situation and dive back in again. And I know that swimmer is going to come back and do it again because it was just an isolated incident. Like most things in life, it's isolated incidences that you run into, but yet we treat it like, oh my God, it's the end of the world. No, it's not. If you're 27, you've got a lifetime of belly flops to do. And yet you also can correct those, especially the next time you do them. I mean, we're always going to fail. We're always going to fall apart. I mean, look at tacos fall apart and we still love them. So why not, take it on and not shy away from it. That's what I see a lot of young people doing. They're shying away from things. I'm not going to go over there. It's too dangerous. I'm going to go over to the easy side for somebody to grab my hand and walk me through it. No, it doesn't work like that in life. If those that really take it on, those belly flops, are the ones that are going to succeed. And I just wish I knew that when I was your age.
When you talk about honing in on your gifts and just like really emphasizing those, it made me kind of think like there's a balance to everything, because I struggle with that personally. And I know a lot of people that, I'm friends with, and like, some of them are much older than me even, and they struggle with this massively. It's like let's just say you have two really good gifts, but you would really like to have another gift. Like you're a keynote speaker, right? There are some people who think that they should focus on the gift of speaking, yet they're not good speakers and they should probably pick a new lane. So, but then there's other people whose philosophy is, well, yes, I'm not good now, but I want to be good. And that could be true for anything. But at what point are you like, actually, I mean, just kind of avoid that because your gifts are over here. So just don't go over here.
Yes, I'm going through that right now, Michael, as a matter of fact. I think in our life, I believe in our life, we're always changing. And when you're changing, you're growing and you're being tested, especially with God's help, that you are being redirected into an area that you possibly should be in. But yet sometimes we fight it, thinking, no, I want to be over here, when really we should be going over there. And so if we start listening to our core more, it'll tell you which direction to go, especially in life. But it's all about listening. It's all about watching and seeing what other people are doing, and whatever they're doing, you do the opposite.
Yeah. So I would like to know what your thoughts are on whenever you feel that kind of like, I don't know which lane to go. I don't know which direction to go. I don't know. And then a lot of us, if not all of us, have that anxiety fear just like dump into our brain because we're like at a stagnant position. And I would really like to know what your thoughts are on just like crushing that anxiety and the fear and flipping it to like a excited, get off the block and go mentality.
Yeah. Another great question. You're a great interviewer, by the way.
Thank you.
I think, you know, at least 70% of professionals feel like treading water at least once a week or holding them back from their goals. And so that is a very normal process for people to go through. But I think it's more of knowing that you have more potential than you really believe that you have. Let me give you an example. I trained for Catalina for a year and a half. I joined a couple relays. I did some pace swimming. I did some kayaking. I was out there just kind of, you know, feeling the land, in other words, of what it was like. And I literally worked on my nutrition. I did all the strength training that was needed. I did all the miles that were involved. But one thing I didn't train on was my mentality. And so when I was in the water, and the water was, you know, the waves were just slapping my face, like, and I was just cursing like a sailor all night long. It wasn't until the sixth mile, when I got to the sixth mile, I said, I've had enough. This is not fun. This is not what I expected. This is not what I signed up for. At least it wasn't like that in the brochure. But it was like, what do I need to do then? What do I need to do? Because I'm either going to sink or swim. It's got to be one or the other. But yet you have to start expecting both, especially when it has to do with your life. Some things you're going to sink, some things you can swim through. But if I didn't do something by that sixth mile, I wasn't going to make it. And the last thing a swimmer wants is to be pulled. You never want to hear the word, we're pulling you. That's one thing you do not want. But I felt like I was getting a little close to that because I was just getting exhausted with all these swells that kept coming at me. And I thought, well, you know, it's you know, there's 100% resistance out there. Water is 100% resistant. And if my body starts feeling resistant, what do I have left? And that's where I went, wait a minute, I've got my mind. What can I do mentally to keep myself going? And then I remembered my dad sharing stories, which he always did as a kid. When we lived in that little 16-foot aristocrat trailer, one of the stories he shared with me was when he was a pilot, Vietnam pilot vet. And he said, if we ever got shot down while in Vietnam and the enemies took us, we're going to be put into a box, like a small little jail. So they had to train how to survive in a box, like entertain themselves, talk to themselves, play games and things like that. I remembered that story at the sixth mile. So I went, wait a minute, if my dad had to train that way, why can't I? I've got plenty of time out here and in order to train in this box, the ocean that I'm in. And so I started playing games with myself. And since it was a full supermoon, one of the games that I played was that my arm, I had to breathe really far, not the typical way, but because of the waves, I had to turn my head a lot farther than usual. So I would turn it even more. And as I was swimming, I'd turn my head and I'd look at the moon. And I'd put my head back in and I would turn this way and I would put it, you know, look at the moon. And I kept doing that back and forth, playing this mind game with myself. And then I thought, wait a minute, I'm actually feeling grateful because I would start thinking I'm the only one in the world right now able to have, you know, that opportunity to see the moon, that view that nobody else can see. I mean, literally, I'm the only one that had that view. And I started appreciating that mind game that I was playing with myself. And so I, before I knew it was time for another feeding. So your mind really can play a part in how you want to approach your life and in succeeding in your life. The other game that I played was I saw this cruise line go by, and I knew it was a cruise line because they were all lit up, that there were all lights. And I thought, at first I thought, you know, I'm jealous. They're on there partying, drinking, dancing, having a great time. Well, my party is not so much fun. But then I thought, wait a minute, I can have a party. So my next speed, I said to the kayaker, I said, hey, throw me my margarita. She's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, let's have a party. And she's like, okay, woo-hoo. We start, you know, talking that way and start singing songs and playing. But then the last game that I was playing was the swells were so high that when I breathe, I would look at one as it's approaching and I would make a decision. Do I put my hand over the wave, through it, or under? And sometimes I would lose on that one, but I would play this game every wave instead of looking at like, oh my God, it's coming toward me. I thought, oh, okay, how can I approach this? So those were the three games that I started playing. And before you knew it, Michael, all of a sudden the sun started to rise. And I was like, oh my God, I just went through the whole night. And it was like a whole brand new day when the sun was coming through. So really, your mind is very, very powerful. It's just a matter of taking advantage of it, especially in an AI world.
Yeah, well, and that's, it just goes to show that like gratitude pretty much solves all when it comes to like fear, anxiety, frustration. Like gratitude, like you look at, you know, books and stories like A Man's Search for Meaning or like Unbroken or, you know, those kind of stories. And you're like, these dudes were in men and women in all the same category in all parts of the world, have been in these situations that we could, they're just unthinkable.
Yes.
And then you hear these little stories that go, they start generations before us and then we're still reading them and watching them and things like that. And it's all surfaced around gratitude.
Yes. Bottom line, that's what it comes down to. And it's just a matter of believing in yourself and taking your gifts, which are even more powerful than your talents. And one of those gifts is your mentality, and to really put it to work for yourself. And all of a sudden, gratitude shows up. It's so true. You're spot on about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I do want to talk about your entrepreneurship journey. I just started mine, I guess, with the podcast, but I have another business that I actually quit my job to go full time in. So I'm really interested in entrepreneurship. I'm really interested in your take on it. And also for you, a lot of that entrepreneurship is your speaking and your messages to folks to, you know, get off the block and go. And I've watched probably combined a good 45 minutes of just a bunch of your speeches, and all of them just make me want to get up and like run. And I don't even like to run.
That's great. Well, as our friend Joel Zeff says, ta-da, I always say splash-tastic. But yeah, it is about having a positive attitude to bring to the stage. And I love my speaking ability, which I always knew as a Leo. I always knew I would want to be on stage. That's why I started the broadcasting, sports broadcasting, back in the day when women weren't even giving football scores. But switching to, you know, motivational, more inspirational now because of my story, that I really do enjoy the speaking side. But as when COVID hit, though, we were all forced to give up those gigs, which was not fun to do, and start something else. And as an entrepreneur, you have to learn to pivot. You have to learn, you know, to get off the block and go when situations arise. And part of that is pivoting. And when COVID hit and my speaking business went to zero, I started a podcast, Hospitality Today Live, for the hospitality industry. But I also started a home watch business. Yes, I flush toilets. That has to do with snowbirds in Arizona that they were in lockdown. They couldn't get to their second homes here in Arizona. So I started a home watch business, and I'm still 6 years running with that. And it's been really fun because it's the same clients and they're never home. So it's one of those dream jobs that a lot of people don't know about. And I think the creativity to start that business to where it is now, I'm very proud of myself. It was a very short, unexpected situation, and I keep it going and keep it small, but I enjoy it tremendously. It's allowing me to utilizing my hospitality skills in a different format, and that's the key. Entrepreneurship is wrapped around your gifts and your talents, the techniques and skills you know, and you can take it any direction you want. I also have an online B2B business for the meetings and events industry called Planspire, and we're still working on that now to get that up and going, because of course business online is something I wanted to dab into to learn more about. So I've got three businesses going on at once here, and now all that trying to coordinate around all the training that I have to do has been quite a challenge. But I think the key here is to take what you know and develop what is the need out there, not a want. There's a difference between a want and a need. You have to really know that it's all about the need. For example, I'm going to put you to test on this, Michael. Let's say a lawnmower. If you had a lawnmower, is a lawnmower a want or a need?
To me, it's a need.
Actually, it's a want. And the reason why it's a want is because you want to cut the grass, but you don't have to use a lawnmower to cut the grass. You can use scissors. you can use other ways.
Here's the example.
yeah, get it? So, you know, is a lawnmower a good invention? Well, yeah, but at the same time, there's other ways to you know, you can always get rid of the grass or, you know, and put rocks in and things like that. It's not really a need. It's a want. So what is the need to cut that grass? That's still up for inventions. But know the difference between a want and a need. But I think the young gens today and the Zs, I mean, there's so much opportunity and so much invention that can take place out there. And I believe that is the way to go. Once I left corporate into entrepreneurship, I never looked back. How about you? Are you enjoying it?
I'm loving it. Yeah. I've always been, you know, a top performer in sales. So like I've always made companies very happy. However, I don't think I've ever been told, Michael, you are a great employee. I think there's a difference there. And I think that's because I'm always thinking about, you know, what could I be doing with my time? If I can get done in 4 hours, what other people can get done in 8 hours, then why don't I spend the other 4 hours on something else instead of sitting here? And like, just, that's just kind of how it goes for me. And now I'm living that, and it's wonderful. And we actually have our, one of our first clients, we have multiple scheduled, but our first actual money making since we've launched this particular business is going to be this Sunday. So perfect.
Nice. Well, here's I think the trick, and I wish I'd known this when I was your age and I was still working for a corporate, is a lot of times we'll go into our jobs and we'll complain. Why don't we do this? Why don't they do that? Well, the key here, I believe, is write that down. Write all those things down that you see differently than your boss or the company, and take those ideas and start your own company in that direction. And if I did that, because there were plenty of times I'm like, well, why don't we do this? Why don't we do that? And I'm like, why didn't I write this down and put a game plan together behind it? I probably would be in a different position today. But a lot of people don't realize also, though, entrepreneurship, though, is still hard. It's still hard. You're still working a lot of hours. You're just going to be more productive because you're more responsible to it being your business.
That's the key for me, because I've noticed, you know, I work 60, 80 hour weeks to kind of get this thing launched and off the ground. And but all my time is accounted for. It's none of my time is sitting kind of scrolling on a computer. It's just all accounted for.
Entrepreneurship, I think, is the way to go today. I really do. If you want creativity, if you want to really put accountability on yourself. If you want growth, if you want ownership of your success, entrepreneurship is wonderful. It really is. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Your business is the speaking. And I've had a lot of speakers because Joel's connected me with a lot of people, which is now what's led me to you. But one of my questions that I have not asked, I don't think any of the speakers, is what do you do on days when you just feel horrible? You're anxious, you're fearful, you're maybe sad, depressed, and you've got to go on stage and perform and have everyone else have this big light bulb turn on and get off the block mentality and everything like that.
The accountability of becoming a speaker is huge because you're not just, you know, communicating to one, you're communicating to the masses. And I always believe, you know, before I get up on stage, I always have butterflies. First of all, there's no escaping that. As a matter of fact, butterflies are beautiful. So I invite that. And so however I am feeling, if, you know, sometimes, you know, I remember getting a text message before going on stage when my parents lost, you know, it was a heartbreaking text that my parents lost their 13-year-old little Shih Tzu, Bailey. And it was like right before I went on stage. So you really have to turn things around. But as a speaker, you have to remember the 20-20-60 rule. And that is, you know, 20% of people are going to like you when you step on stage. There's another 20% that will immediately not like you. And then yet there's the other 60% that you have to convince. And they don't know yet. They haven't heard your message. They haven't seen you, you know, how you approach things. So you really have to focus on that 60% when you walk on stage, and you have that opportunity to change your attitude, to, you know, kind of get that affirmation underneath your belt before you get up on stage. So whatever a speaker is going through before, you have to just, you know, tuck that part away right away. And deal with it later. So that is a tough call when you have to get on stage and you're not right, you're ready for it. So that your mind can start playing games with you. So you have to start playing mind games back immediately and, you know, get up, move around, you know, do some jumping jacks behind stage, whatever it's going to take you to shake it out of whatever you're going through. And just remember, you are there for a purpose, to expand your message. And if you really believe in your message, you will do that.
Yeah. And I've never seen you in person, obviously, for one of your messages, but, what I did notice, that really stuck out to me, I even wrote it, on my little notes, is just one of my couple of bullet points, is I don't know that I've ever been able to see through a screen someone giving a speech, walking through the crowd and seeing like genuine, like love and care on their face whenever you're walking around, like basically interacting with people during your speeches. And you can just tell even by watching on a screen that in that moment, it's you and that person and there's no one else around. And I think that is just very commendable. So I'm sure that is just one of your many skills, but it certainly was one that stuck out to me even just watching online. So
thank you. Yeah, because as a speaker, if you can touch one person, a mentor told me this a long time, just reach out to one person, you'll make a difference.
Yeah, that's the point of this podcast. I don't have a big following, but you know, maybe I will down the road. Who knows?
You are. You will definitely. How can you not with a name called Pod Staff?
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody's a staff, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Awesome. Well, just to close out, I always like to ask everyone final thoughts on really that person out there who might be struggling, maybe going through a mental health struggle, maybe going through depression, anxiety, maybe struggling with faith. What would you say to that person to maybe get off the block or maybe find a block to get off of, you know?
Yeah. I totally can relate. I mean, I've never been in a depressive state until COVID hit. And I didn't even know it until someone said, you know, Deborah, you're depressed. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And until someone recognizes what you're going through and listening to what somebody might say, and realizing, because it took somebody to say to me, Deborah, you're depressed. And I'm like, I am not. But I needed to recognize that. And once I did, I was able to, you know, be on that journey to solve it. And I think that is the biggest thing. Don't deny anything. Don't deny your belly flops. Don't deny that you're in the wrong lane. Don't deny that, you know, you're more of a talker than a listener. I mean, always know, we all want to be right, but at the end of the day, it's about solving the issues that you might be going through, and to know you're not alone, to reach out and to talk about it.
It's amazing. Yeah, I appreciate that. And that's what I love about this podcast too, is that speaks to me too. And every time, you know, I get to talk with someone like you, it's just wonderful. So I really appreciate it. And last question for you, I've been asking it recently. Who's the most famous contact in your phone?
The most famous contact in my phone? Oh my goodness. Well, I'm going to have to say John Neighbor, who was a famous backstroker in the Olympics early days, who I admired and watched while I was, going up the ranks in the swimming world. So, John Neighbor, he's a friend of mine now. So yeah, that's a amazing. Good question. I like that. What about you? Who's famous in yours besides me?
Well, you're actually not a contact in my phone yet, but I do like to kind of build a network by my podcasters, because I like to be able to call upon someone for advice too. Famous contact in my phone. No one's ever reversed a question on me, but you know, just for the sake of the podcast, I'm going to go with Mr. Joel Zeff. You know, he's been on all the commercials and everything like that. And I think I've never seen a person that was more well-connected in a network than him. That would be mine for now.
Well, that way we can end the podcast by saying ta-da.
Yes. Ta-da. Well, thank you so much, Deb, and really appreciate you coming on. This has been a wonderful episode, and we will be sharing it out probably in July.
I can't wait, and thank you to Joel for introducing us, and keep it going. This is a great podcast. I'm very, very impressed with you, and if anybody wants to feel not alone, this is the podcast to belong to, so congratulations.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
This episode is sponsored by Tin Can Timepieces. Looking for a watch that's built for anything life throws at you? Let me introduce you to Tin Can Timepieces. This is more than just a watch. It's a commitment to quality and purpose. Tin Can Timepieces is proudly based out of Georgia and is owned and operated by an active duty U.S. Navy submariner. That's right, a company built on discipline and precision. Every watch they create is handcrafted and features reliable automatic movements, ensuring you get a premium quality feel with every tick. Whether you need a rugged diver or a classic dress watch, Tin Can offers an assortment of styles for every mission. Tin Can Timepieces. Hand-built for purpose, built for the depths. Dive deeper and check out their collection today at tincantime.com.